You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Well, I got a phone call today from a so-called journalist from Channel 4 News in Phoenix today. And he said, and I quote, "Mr. Cooper, we saw the terrible roasting you got in the newspaper. We'd like to send a team up to interview you." Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to tell you what I told that man, because it might just burn your ears off, but there will be no interview with me, with any established press in this country ever. They're liars. When I find a newspaper that knows how to print the truth, I'll consent to an interview. When I find a television station that knows how to tell the truth, I'll consent to an interview. But not until then. They're liars, they're traitors, and they're scum. We couldn't get a fair hearing anywhere, so I wrote a book. It's been the underground bestseller, not just in this country, but all over the world for the last 4 years, ladies and gentlemen. Bar none. It's outsold every single book that's been printed without any advertisement of any kind of any of the books that are called underground publications. Now, with some advertising, folks, my book would have outsold probably any book in history. They wouldn't give us a fair hearing on radio, so I started my own radio show. They lie in the newspapers, so now we have our own newspaper, Veritas, and it's the best in the country, and it's the only place you're going to find the truth. And if they keep screwing around with me, I'll start my own television station. Just call me and tell me I can't do it. People have been telling me I can't do it for years. Can't do what? I can do any damn thing I want to, and I've proven it. And so can you, ladies and gentlemen. Don't tell me that one person can't make a difference. Don't tell me that you are just one lonely, little old helpless soul who hasn't got the time or the money or the brains to do it, because that's a lie, and I've proven it, because I've done it, and I'm no better than any of you. I just won't quit. And I'm not afraid of anybody or anything. And you're going to meet a woman tonight, a good friend of mine, who feels the same way. She cares and she works hard for the causes that she believes in. And for that, she's been persecuted. She's been smacked down, but she refuses to stay down. And for all of you who have been calling and asking when we're going to have our next seminar here, the 29th of May through the 2nd of June. The 29th of May through the 2nd of June, right here in St. John's, Arizona. So if you'd like to come, you better get your reservation in soon, because the last one we had was full. And this one, based upon the last one, and based upon everything we've done since, we'll probably have about 800 times more applications to attend than we can hold. Now, for CAGI members and intelligence service members who have a single membership, the fee is $100. For family members with two family members who will attend, the fee is $150. For family members who have three or more members who will attend, no matter how many members, if it's three or more, the fee is $200. For anyone who is not a member, the fee is $350, non-negotiable, period. If you belong to anything that even resembles a subversive organization, such as the Anti-Defamation League, or any organization that has attacked the Constitution of the United States of America, or patriots, you can't come. I don't care if you send us $5 million. Once again, May the 29th through June the 2nd, we will have our second conference here in St. John's, Arizona at the Research Center. And I'll be talking more about that as time goes by. Fee for single members of CAGI or the intelligence service is $100. For family members with two members who will attend, it's $150. For family members who have three or more members attending, it's $200. For non-members, the fee, ladies and gentlemen, is $350, non-negotiable. Once the fee has been paid, it is non-refundable. In other words, once you have a space reserved for yourself, if you decide you cannot come, the fee is non-refundable. Understand that. That means you have to sell your place. And that's up to you to do that. We will help you if we can, but that's up to you to do it. Don't go away. I'll be right back after this short pause with our special guest, Karen Scarborough.
Dragnet, their job to enforce the law and preserve the safety of decent citizens. Decent citizens. Thank you.
Good evening, Karen.
Hi, Del.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Okay.
How did all this start?
Pardon me?
How did all this start? Let's go back to the beginning. Tell our listeners from your own mouth how all this started.
In 1990, the Libertarian Party, actually the Metro Detroit Libertarians, were holding their annual peaceful tax protest on tax day in front of the Royal Oak Post Office in Michigan. Someone put a smoke bomb in one of the mail receptacles, and although the nuclear freeze people and Scientologists were also there, the Libertarians were the only ones called before the grand jury to testify.
So they only called Libertarians, nobody else who was there?
That's right.
How did they know who was a Libertarian and who wasn't?
Just by interrogating people. They asked the chair of the Michigan Party for the membership list, which he refused to turn over. But this is what they did. They also followed people around. They went through our members' trash. They intimidated people. These were some of the tactics that were used.
Okay, so now how did you get involved in this, Karen? Where were you when this took place?
I was in the car. I never got out of the car. I was feeling very ill that day. I was in the midst of kidney failure, although at the time I didn't know it. I never got out of the car. I never saw the smoke bomb. I never saw anything that went on.
Who was in the car with you? Anybody?
Yes. At the beginning, my husband Scott was driving. Pete Hendrickson was in the passenger seat, and I was in the back seat.
And so when you got there, what happened?
When we got there, we dropped off our tax return, and we went to find a place to park because we were planning on joining our friends at the tax protest. As soon as we found a parking spot, we heard sirens. We thought there had been an accident. Scott got out of the car, and he said, "I want to go see what's going on." And he started running towards the tax protest. I felt so bad by that time that I just stayed in the car with Pete.
Pete is Hendrickson, right?
Yes.
Okay. And neither one of you ever got out of the car at all?
That's correct.
Okay. And then what happened? When did Scott come back?
Well, we saw that the streets were being blocked off, so we figured it'd be best to leave before the car got blocked in. We drove around looking for him. We didn't see him. We couldn't get anywhere near where he actually was. And so we drove back to Pete's apartment where we waited for him. It was only about 4 miles from where the tax protest was held, and my husband is a marathon runner, so we knew for him it would be no problem to walk back.
And so was he arrested? Did he show up? What happened to Scott?
Not that night. He met us back at the apartment a few hours later, after he had determined what went on and talked to a few people at the protest. We stayed at Pete's house until about 11 o'clock, and then we went home.
Okay. And how did you become a suspect? Or who actually was the suspect in this thing? Let's do that first. Who was the suspect in the beginning with the authorities, I guess, in planting the smoke bomb? They weren't concerned about the protest, just this so-called phosphorus bomb. Is that correct?
So they say, yes.
Okay. Well, of course, we know better, but then we get to that later. Now, phosphorus bombs can be made from the heads of matchsticks. I don't know if most of you out there understand that or not, but it's true. So this could have been made by just about anybody with just a whole bunch of wooden matchsticks. But anyway, who was the first suspect?
Well, there were actually 5 people, which we humorously referred to as the Royal Oak Five after that. Then eventually they zeroed in on Pete Hendrickson. He became the target of the investigation.
Why?
Because he had outstanding tax charges. They knew he would probably be the most vulnerable.
So they were going to lean on him and threaten him with jail unless he turned somebody else in. Is that correct?
Yes, they did that.
Well, they not only did that, but they did something else. What did they do to him and his family?
About 7 o'clock in the morning, 15 armed federal agents surrounded his apartment. His wife was breastfeeding their 7-month-old child at the time. they broke the door down. They took the baby out of Doreen's arms. They refused to let the child stay with her ex-husband, who frequently took care of the child. And they led Pete and Doreen away in handcuffs and left the baby on the bed. They then called social services and charged Pete and Doreen with abandonment. It took Pete and Doreen 2 days to get their child back. They called Children's Village, where they thought the baby was, and Children's Village lied to them and said the baby wasn't there, and it was.
Now, let me get this straight. They took the child away from the parents, and then they charged the parents with child abandonment.
Yes.
Boy.
Pete and Doreen are excellent parents, as far as I know.
I'm mad already, and we haven't even started this yet. I'm still mad from last night, to tell you the truth. Now, in order to get their child back and patch up their family and get some kind of a guarantee that Pete wasn't going to be in jail forever, they had to turn over on somebody, right?
Yes.
And what was the deal that was made?
Well, before they decided to turn anyone in, Pete understood he would get a rather light sentence. But again, they didn't tell him the truth. The judge gave him 27 months.
Well, when's everybody out there going to realize that these people are nothing but liars? Why do you believe them in the first place? That's beyond me.
Yes, right. As soon as Pete found out he was getting 27 months, he then asked how he could get his sentence reduced. And they said, well, you could turn someone else in. So he named off a list of names, and they said, no, we don't think so. The next person, no, we don't think that one either. And then he said, well, what about the Scarboroughs? And they said, well, aren't they activists in the Libertarian Party? And Pete said, yes, Karen Scarborough is the vice chair of the party. And that's when they said, okay, that sounds good to us.
So they then, Pete and I guess Doreen, did she have anything to do with this?
I really don't know how much either one of them had to do with it. We don't know. Pete did plead guilty to the crime, but I don't know if he did it.
Well, how could you not know if he did it if he was in the car with you?
Well, I don't know much about bombs, but it has been mentioned to me that this could have been done earlier with a timed fuse. Again, I just don't know how it would be done.
Yeah, well, you're right. It could have been. But every time I've gone to these places where you drive by in your car and you put your tax forms and stuff in this big bin, there's always a postal employee there who takes them from the people from the car and puts them in the bin.
Yes.
Was there anybody there like that this time?
Yes, there was someone who took our tax return by hand when we drove by.
So somebody couldn't have just gone up there and tossed some bomb in this bin, I mean, because there was a guy standing right there taking the tax returns from the cars as they came by.
That's what I would think. However, there is the fact that Doreen had access to red phosphorus and did obtain some.
That really doesn't mean anything because a lot of people have access to phosphorus and red phosphorus. In fact, it's easy to get.
Yes. It bothers me, though, that her testimony in court was that she had obtained the red phosphorus for heat to use in something like this.
Okay. Well, let's get on with this. Now, Pete named you and your husband, Scott.
Yes.
And then what happened? They came and they drug you out of your house and put you in handcuffs and drug your husband out of his workplace and put him in handcuffs and hauled you all away.
Yes. That was probably the most horrible experience I have ever had. Four armed federal agents showed up at my front door at 8 o'clock in the morning. I had just received a call about 10 minutes prior from Scott. He told me that the postal inspectors had showed up at Ford Motor, where he worked as an engineer. And I didn't think much of it. I thought they were just there to question him. Then 10 minutes later, the doorbell rang, and there they were. I was getting ready to go to my first post-operative appointment after cataract surgery, and my mother was going to be picking me up. They were at the front door, and they said, you're under arrest for the bombing of the Royal Oak Post Office.
Now, why did they call this a bomb? Obviously, there wasn't a bomb.
No, it wasn't. And I wasn't under arrest for the bombing. I was under arrest for perjury. We had been granted immunity from prosecution for the bombing because they knew we didn't do it. Anything to do with it.
Well, now, wait a minute. I talked about this last night, but we haven't talked about it tonight. Mm-hmm. How did you ever come under question? Why did they even question you in the first place? How did they even know you were there?
People knew that Scott was there, and everyone told the truth. They asked him who they saw there.
Yeah.
And they told him that Scott was there.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, when Scott told his story, the knives were in the car. And so we became part of the investigation.
So they then called you in. And why would they give you immunity if they didn't think that you had anything to do with it?
They knew we didn't have anything to do with it.
Okay, then why did they give you immunity? I have to play the devil's advocate because my listeners are going to ask these questions and they expect me to ask them so that this whole story gets out in the open so that they can feel comfortable about helping us do something about this.
Well, I think they gave us immunity because all of the libertarians, except for one, took the Fifth Amendment. When you go before a grand jury, they can use absolutely anything you say against you. And we're all familiar with the goings-on of the government. We were advised by our attorneys to take the Fifth. So the only way that they could make us testify was to grant us immunity, which they did. The only one they did not grant immunity to was Pete because he was the target.
So then you testified and you told them what had happened, which is what you've told us tonight.
Yes, I knew essentially nothing, which is what I told them. The sixth count of my conviction is my answer. My answer is, I don't remember. I was convicted on that basis.
On what basis? Say that again. I'm not quite sure I understand.
The question that they asked me, that the grand jury asked, was did I remember a meeting that took place on a certain date at a certain time? And I said, no, I don't remember, because actually I think I wasn't at half these meetings that they asked me about. And I was convicted on that basis, that I did not remember.
You were convicted of what?
That I didn't remember.
You're convicted of, but Reagan, every time he was asked anything, said he didn't remember.
Yes, right.
And to this day, he doesn't remember. You know how he's protecting himself today? Reagan doesn't have Alzheimer's, folks. It's his protection. He doesn't remember. Oh, boy. So you didn't remember this meeting, and because you said you didn't remember, they convicted you of perjury? Is that it?
Yes. Well, that is essentially it.
And what was your husband convicted of?
Same thing, perjury.
And what?
Conspiracy to obstruct justice.
What was his perjury supposed to have been?
That we did not tell the grand jury the truth.
About what?
About who placed the bomb or who made the bomb, anything about it. We just didn't have any information.
So you didn't know anything about the bomb. So they claimed... Now, how could they convict you of perjury unless they could prove that you did know something about it?
That's what I'd like to know. It's supposed to be innocent until proven guilty.
Okay, that's what I'm trying to bring out. And I hope you'll forgive me, Karen. I love you dearly. So don't, you know, just have patience. I've got to bring these things out so the listeners know what's going on.
Okay.
So they had no proof whatsoever. They presented no evidence whatsoever that you knew anything about any bomb or anybody who planted any bomb. In fact, it wasn't a bomb. It was a phosphorus device that makes a lot of stink and a little bit of fire and a whole lot of smoke.
Well, not only did they not present any evidence, but the government's eyewitness did not identify either Pete Hendrickson or Scott Scarborough, my husband, as the person who placed the smoke bomb.
Now, is Pete clean-shaven? Or was he then?
I remember. I think he is, yes.
Was he then?
Yes.
Okay. But your husband has never been clean-shaven.
No, he's always had a mustache.
And he doesn't have reddish hair.
No.
And the witness described someone as reddish hair and clean-shaven.
Mm-hmm.
And a few other things that didn't match at all. And failed to identify your husband in court.
Yes, that's correct. Also, the government's own forensic witnesses testified that the bomb could not have been made the way that Hendrickson said it was made. So that's why I also doubt he did it.
Well, I doubt that he did it, too. I think he said what he said because he knew that he was going to go to jail on income tax evasion charges, and they had taken his child away and told him he was never going to get his child again unless he did these things.
Yes, I think you're right.
And when confronted with those kinds of circumstances, most people would get scared and do whatever they wanted them to do, even if they had to rat on their own mother.
Mm-hmm.
That's unfortunate, but it happens to be a fact of life in this country where there's more pussies than there are real live men and women.
Yes, it happens all the time.
So this is what happened to you. And I want to reiterate again, folks, that they never presented any proof whatsoever that you ever knew anything about any bomb or any incendiary device or any smoke device or anybody who planted any such thing. Yet they convicted you of perjury because you had said to the grand jury that you didn't know anything about it.
Yes, that's true. Pete Henderson mentioned on the stand that he had failed 3 polygraph tests. Since he ventured that information, Scott's attorney had every right to question Pete about the polygraph, but the judge would not allow it.
In other words, the truth is, once it's brought up, it's fair game, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so you went through this trial process. Were you both tried together or separately?
We were tried together.
Okay, and you were both convicted of perjury.
Yes.
Now, the trial was weighted in favor of the prosecution.
Oh, no doubt about it. Every single objection by the defense was overruled. Every single objection by the prosecution was sustained.
Now, this is a pattern, folks, that is emerging across the country. If you go into a federal court and you're charged with anything, unless you are what they call a disadvantaged poor person who's been dealing in drugs or prostitution or something like that, you've had it. You're going to jail, most likely, unless some miracle occurs. That's just about what happens, isn't it?
Yes, that's exactly what happens. It was clear to us that this judge and the prosecutors had it in for us from the beginning. It was clear.
Now, the real purpose of all this was really to squash the Libertarian Party movement in the state of Michigan. Isn't that correct?
Yes, I believe it was.
And I believe it was, too, from all I've done. And I've studied this a lot, folks. I mean, I just didn't get on the radio here and start talking about this. I never do. In fact, I put Karen through the ringer to furnish me with enough facts and names and things that we could do the research and make the calls and verify that all of this is true and did occur before we did this. And the reason was to protect Karen as well as of course, the hour of the time. And also, there's a concern of the Constitution Party involved in this. What are you doing now, Karen? Let's go back to then. You were what with the Libertarian Party?
I was the vice chair of the Libertarian Party of Michigan.
For the whole state?
Yes.
Now, the Libertarian Party isn't some wacko outfit out of left field, although it may have started out that way, and most people sort of have the impression that the Libertarian Party is a bunch of pot-smoking eggheads, but that just really isn't the case, is it?
No, no, not at all.
And they're on the ballot in I believe, every state in the union, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
And the last couple of elections, they made a pretty decent showing across the country.
Yes, they did.
Although I wouldn't give them a prayer for a presidential candidate.
No.
They certainly have made a lot of progress. They have some responsible members. Don't you have to take an oath when you join the Libertarian Party, or don't you have to make a statement that you believe in a nonviolent solution to problems?
Yes. The oath that you have to take, that you actually have to sign before you can become a member, states that you do not uphold the initiation of force to achieve any social or political goals.
Okay, I'm going to ask you to hold on, Karen, and we're going to come right back to you after a short pause that we got to take care of, okay? Don't go away, folks. We will return in just a moment.
Now I'd just like to say a few words right here about taxes. I pay another man to do my taxes. I won't count it as just one more deduction I can take. But the postman brought my W-2 this morning. He they're claiming a third. Well, I'm it. Yeah, I'm just as patriotic as the next man. And you know I love that red, white, and blue. So I'll help to pay this rising cost of freedom. But I'll be damned if I'm going to change my point of view. Cause every time the Democrats run out of money, well, Congress talks to the worthy man. And I won't thank one of this money when they take much of my money. And do things that I don't understand. I don't know why they feel they got a squeeze. But I'll tell you just exactly where I stand. I believe the 10% Jacob Jesus. They ought to be held for all the same. Woo! Now some of them folks we've been sending off the country think that all they've got to do is spend and spend. But you know, you can't run a family, much less a country, with more money going out than coming in.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Hour of the Time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading, the only source that I can recommend to you with a clear conscience to get your hands on some real money. That's precious metals. And the best newspaper, your only source of the facts in this entire country. In this issue, ladies and gentlemen, is listed so that, and we did this for the convenience of those people who would like to have this list, and also so that we could say to those who never do anything that use the excuse that they don't know how to get their hands on this information, we published the name, address, fax number, and phone number of everybody in Washington, D.C., and I mean everybody, so that you won't have any excuses anymore. This issue concentrated on the Conference of the States. And what you're going to learn about the Conference of the States, not just from us, but from Colorado State Senator Charlie Duke, who wrote an open letter to the American citizens of the Republic. And we put that right on the front page, along with a lot of other things. I wrote an editorial that will completely change your entire view of the world and will give you a glimpse into the future that you can't find anywhere else. I'm not going to tell you what it is, of course, because you need to subscribe and make sure that you get every single issue of Veritas. You also need to call Swiss America Trading and make sure that you've got some real money in your pockets, because if you don't, you're going to be terribly hurt when everything comes tumbling down. Have you seen the dollar in comparison with the Japanese yen and the German mark and the Swiss franc lately? And I mean today? Have you been paying attention? Have you noticed that the dollar is tumbling at an unbelievable rate? It's down to around 86 yen to the dollar. Yet the stock market is reaching all new highs. Ladies and gentlemen, if you know anything about economics at all, you know this. Something stinks, and it ain't in Denmark. It's right here in the United States of America. When they pull the plug and the stock market comes tumbling down, as it must, and when you all realize that the dollar can't possibly devaluate in comparison to any other paper in the world because none of them have any value to devaluate against, there is nothing to compare with. When you understand that, you'll realize that we're being manipulated from every angle. You're being set up for a great fall, just like what happened in Mexico. And speaking of Mexico, you better be prepared for the millions of Mexican citizens who are going to start their trek north because they can no longer live in Mexico. That's how bad it is. Call now 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Tell them that you are a rabid listener to the Hour of the Time, and you'll get special treatment. 1-800-289-2646. 800-236-2646. Do it now, folks. You'll be glad that you did. Don't wait.
Don't you laugh. Cause one day soon you might just look down at the paycheck and figure out that they done started taking hacks. And if it's time to do a crack run out of money, well, Congress sucks it to the working man. And I don't think it's going to look funny when they take too much of my money. And do things that I don't understand. And I don't know why they seem to God please us. But I bet you just exactly what I'm saying. I'll leave a testament to the speaker. Well, it ought to be enough for Uncle Sam. I said a testament to the speaker. Well, it ought to be enough. You know, time gets tough. It ought to be enough for Uncle Sam.
Welcome back, Karen.
Hi, Bill.
Okay, now let's continue where we left off. You were the vice chair for the Libertarian Party for the state of Michigan.
Yes, that's correct.
What happened to the Libertarian Party after this little incident happened?
Well, we never had another tax protest at Royal Oak. Actually, I reinstated it last year and was dragged into court again on a probation violation.
Well, let's talk about that for a little bit. What happened? I mean, you were actually sentenced not to jail, but to probation on confinement at home.
8 months home confinement, yeah.
8 months home confinement. Could you leave at all?
Yes. I was allowed to leave at 7 o'clock in the morning. This was 7 days a week, and I was allowed to be gone until 8:30 at night. When we went to this tax protest, we went right after I left work. And we left the tax protest itself at about 7:45 to give me enough time to get home.
Did they tell you that you couldn't attend any kind of a political meeting or anything?
No, there was never anything said about that.
What did they tell you the conditions were of your home confinement?
I could not drink excessively. I could not use illegal drugs, which I don't do either of those anyway.
They said you couldn't drink excessively or couldn't drink at all?
Couldn't drink excessively.
Boy, that's strange. That's really strange. Usually they tell you that you can't drink at all. Go ahead.
Right. And the other one was I could not have a firearm.
Okay, that's a standard recipe. Anything else?
No, that's it.
You just couldn't leave until a certain time in the morning, and you had to be back by a certain time in the evening.
That's correct.
So you went to this tax protest, and then what happened?
Approximately 2 days later, my probation officer came to my place of work and served me with a subpoena to court.
Now, how did the probation officer know that you had gone to this tax protest meeting?
I had been interviewed by, I think, 3 or 4 news stations.
Uh-oh.
Yes, at the protest.
The scumbag journalists did it again, and they probably put a bad slant on it, too, didn't they?
Well, I didn't see it. I don't know.
Did you hear about it?
Yes, I also heard that they had FBI and postal inspectors watching me at the tax protest.
Why?
I don't know. Evidently, they consider me a really dangerous criminal.
The only criminals in this country is them.
Yes.
that I can see.
Yes, they tried to make a case in court that day over the probation violation that they saw me running up and down the street. I wear leg braces. I can't run. I can walk. And they were trying to get the judge to put me in jail.
Now, what was the reason they wanted to put you in jail? I mean, they must have given a reason to the court. I mean, you just can't walk in and say, put this person in jail. What did they say?
They said that I had violated my probation, that it was clear that I had broken the law. I had violated the terms of my probation.
How did they say you violated the law?
Well, they didn't really. The only thing that saved me that day was my previous probation officer who had retired at the time, who was the only person that spoke up for me. And he knew. I think he had doubts that I had committed any crime in the first place.
Well, what crime did they accuse you of?
When I was in court this time?
When they said you had violated your parole.
Oh, I don't know. I had the piece of paper stating the hours I could be away. It was signed by both the probation officer and me. So I don't know to this day It's whatever they decide it is.
So what happened? What was the outcome of this?
The outcome was I got another 8 months of home confinement.
Just because you went to a tax protest, you didn't break any law, you didn't hurt anybody, you didn't set off any bombs, you didn't threaten anybody, and you were home on time.
That's correct.
And what was the justification for this? What did the judge say?
Well, when I was on the stand, she asked me if I thought I could do absolutely anything I wanted to during my home confinement. And I said, well, no, of course not. I said, I know that I can't drink excessively, I can't take illegal drugs, and I can't have a firearm. And I said, I haven't done any of those things. When I went back and sat down, the judge in her summation said, I can't believe you thought you could do anything you wanted to do. Well, I didn't say that at all.
But what was she trying to say that you couldn't go to a tax protest?
Evidently.
But that's retroactive, and that's certainly not right or legal, is it?
Well, none of this is right or legal.
Yeah, yeah, I know that, but there's people out there saying, well, she must have done something or the judge wouldn't have sentenced her. And you and I know better, and a lot of other people in this country know better, that there is no justice system in this country anymore. It's a just us system, and we ain't part of the us, are we?
Not at all. No, not at all. I think I also neglected to mention the article that you read on the air last night.
Mm-hmm.
That was written by Vin Sopranowitz. He is the assistant editor at the Las Vegas Review Journal. When this article appeared in, it's just a small tabloid called the Arizona Libertarian, the Michigan prosecutor got wind of it. He called Sopranowitz's boss in Las Vegas and requested that he be fired.
Well, let him try that with me. You see, I'm my own boss. I've got my own radio program. I pay my own bills. I don't owe anybody anything. And if this guy wants to play around with me, we'll put more heat on him than he ever dreamed of in his life. And I'm going to begin an investigation of these people and what they have done to you and Scott Scarborough. And we're going to get we're going to enlist the aid of the listeners of this broadcast. And we're going to put this out in the light of day where it belongs. There are too many crooks in the so-called justice system picking on too many decent human beings, good Americans. We can't allow this to continue anymore.
Well, you're right, and that's why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Now, one of the reasons they're leaning on you now is they found out that you're involved politically with another party now.
Yes.
And what are you doing, Karen?
I am the national director for the Constitution Party.
And what is what are your duties?
Well, how much time have you got?
I know what you do, and believe me, I appreciate every bit of it, but there are people out there who don't know. You got to tell them.
One of the things that I do is process the new memberships, send out membership cards, platforms, fill all requests for information. I schedule Aaron Russo on radio shows around the country. I'm drawing a blank. I don't know why, because this is a never...
And a lot of other things, and answer people's questions, and
yeah,
spend hours on the phone, and put up with my idiosyncrasies, and Aaron's idiosyncrasies, and everybody else's idiosyncrasies, and you take care of the state coordinators who are organizing the different states and all kinds of things.
Yes, I forgot that part.
Well, I haven't forgotten it. And I'm not going to let anybody else forget it either. So, and they take great affront to this, don't they?
Yes, I think they consider us a very real threat.
Well, we are a real threat. And I'm glad that they're getting that message, because... the old way is going to go by the wayside here pretty soon if we have anything to do with it, and I think we will have a lot to do with it, and they're not going to get away with these kinds of scummy things anymore. Now, in fact, you and Scott both appealed your convictions, didn't you?
Yes, we did.
And what was the upshot of that?
Well, both convictions were affirmed in unpublished decisions because this had violated 5 previously set precedents. They didn't want our case setting a new precedent, and so this is what they do when they want to avoid that.
And they didn't want to admit publicly that they had screwed you, right?
No, they didn't. They made it a per curiam decision,
which means that not one of the justices would take responsibility for the decision.
Chicken pluckers. They're chicken pluckers, cowards. Won't take responsibility for their decisions.
Right.
And we're paying them to take responsibility, aren't we?
Yes.
So they wouldn't publish their decisions, they wouldn't take responsibility, and they sealed the records.
28 days after Scott filed his first Freedom of Information Act request, they sealed all the records, and this was almost 2 years after the trial.
And this is unprecedented, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, you just don't do this kind of stuff, especially for a perjury trial.
Yes.
I mean, you seal records when what comes up in the trial would affect the national security.
Yes, that's right. Or affect the security of another human being, which, of course, it doesn't.
Well, actually, it does. It affects the jobs of all of these crooks
right.
who claim to be judges and prosecutors and all of these other things that they're not. They're crooks.
Yes.
Stealing from the people of America is what they're doing.
Right.
Okay. So they sealed everything, and Scott was supposed to come home, and what happened?
You mean, at what time are we talking about?
Well, they doubled your sentence, right?
Yeah.
You had 8 months. They gave you 8 months more with no new trial, no charges, no, just doubled your sentence. How do you do that? How do you double somebody's sentence?
When you're a federal judge, it is my experience you can do pretty much anything you want because you are not accountable.
Oh, you mean the federal judge is God?
Evidently, she has a lifetime appointment and is not accountable to anyone.
Well, that's not true. She is accountable, and she can be impeached.
Mm-hmm.
And she can also be charged criminally in certain circumstances. Isn't that correct?
Yes. It happens so rarely, though. This is what we would like to see happen. Then true justice would be done.
Well, maybe it will. We'll find out. So what happened to Scott?
Scott was sentenced to 18 months in Morgantown Federal Correctional Institution in West Virginia.
And he's not there now. Where is he?
He is in a halfway house in a very bad part of Detroit. He is allowed to come home on the weekends, and that's it.
Okay, so he has to stay in this halfway house until weekends, and then he can come home. Can he come home now on weekends?
Yes.
And but he was supposed to come home for good, wasn't he?
He was supposed to come home last week, which is when he was eligible for home confinement. He has adhered to all the rules of the halfway house. He has done absolutely everything he's supposed to do. He goes to work every day. But when they found out that he filed this motion to have these records unsealed, they denied his home confinement.
Well, because they want to punish him now because if these records are unsealed, they could all find themselves being charged for criminal behavior. Is that correct?
Yes. But they couldn't give that as a reason for denying his home confinement. They had to come up with something else. So the probation officer did a home visit last week, and unbeknownst to me, she went to the judge and said that home confinement should be denied because, she said, I threatened her.
Now, how did she say you threatened her?
She didn't. I have no idea what she's talking about.
She said you raised your hand to her, you verbally threatened her, you pulled a gun on her, you stuck a hat pin in her behind. What happened?
I still have no idea what the reason is. I'm trying to have my attorney find out, and I think he still doesn't know.
So then, because they say, now, can you threaten, could you hurt somebody?
I doubt it. Not with the...
Now, folks, I don't want to embarrass Karen, and I don't want her to have to... I'm not going to ask her to tell you all these things, so I'm going to tell you. She's legally blind. She's had an operation for cataracts. She's had 3 kidney transplants, and you all know that just 1 kidney transplant is a terrible operation, and most people don't recover from these things for the rest of their life. She wears braces, and she suffers from diabetes, which... And she has arthritis. Now, this is a woman who has been terribly afflicted with a lot of bad health and bad luck in her life. And she has struggled to overcome it. She has been active in politics. She has been active in her community. She has been a good citizen. She has worked. She has not laid down and cried and taken welfare and you know, all these things that perfectly healthy people do, that makes her very, very special in my eyes. And I think that it should in just about everybody's eyes, but you're going to have to make that decision yourself. So you couldn't have threatened her, and indeed, if you had threatened her, she'd have to be a blithering idiot to believe that you ever could have carried out any threat and hurt her in any manner.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. She also suggested to me, when she found out that I was no longer at my previous job, she said, well, you know, you can get disability. And I said, excuse me, I don't want anything from the government. I can provide my own living. And she had a hard time with that. She couldn't understand that.
Well, that's probably what made her so mad. That's probably what threatened her.
Yes.
You see, if you don't take anything from the government, then they don't have jobs, you see, because they're parasites.
Mm-hmm.
All of these people are parasites. And it's the truth. It is the absolute truth.
Well, after all that I've lost physically, I have always been able to maintain my self-respect, and I have always worked.
Okay, so now what's happened to Scott? They said now that he can't come home. Did they extend his sentence like they did yours?
No, he will be in the halfway house until May 11th.
But he's in a very dangerous situation, and how he's threatened them with having these records unsealed, opened up.
Yes, I'm very afraid for Scott's life at this point.
So if they're afraid that these records are going to be opened up and their jobs are going to be threatened and their very freedom is going to be threatened if they're convicted of criminal behavior, they're liable to do anything to get rid of Scott.
That would be my guess, yes.
What's happened at this halfway house that would make it very easy for them to do that?
Well, shortly before Scott got to the halfway house, a guy was shot to death outside the place. Another guy was shot in the back, and he is now paralyzed. And Scott's caseworker, her name is Miss Perryman, her car window was shot out last week. So there are quite a few shootings in that neighborhood.
So they could bump him off and say, well, you know, it's just part of the neighborhood. This
yeah.
goes on there, and he just happened to get, you know, he was the victim that day.
Yes.
Okay. Now, folks, I'm gonna ask that you get active and help Karen and Scott out, because this is terrible. It's not only a terrible miscarriage of justice. It's happening all over the country to a lot of other people, and we've got to draw the line, and we've got to take a stand, and we've got to stop this, and we've got to get these crooks out of the justice system, out of government, and we've got to take this country back. We have to. If we don't, then sooner or later, we're all going to be victims of these people. I don't know about you, but I don't intend to be, and I've drawn the line a long time ago, and I've been fighting tooth and nail ever since, and I'm going to continue. Now, here are some people that you need to contact to demand an investigation into this whole matter and to demand that the records in the case of Scott Scarborough be opened up and examined by an impartial investigative panel. And you can call United States Representative Dave Kildee, K-I-L-D-E-E. He's a representative for the state of Michigan. The number is 202-225-3611. That's Dave Kildee.
Bill?
Yes.
That's Dale Kildee.
Dale, I'm sorry. Yes, it clearly says Dale. That's my fault. I don't know how I read Dave into that. It's Dale Kildee, folks. 202-225-3611. Please correct that to Dale. Also, United States Senator for Michigan, Carl Levin, L-E-V as in Victor, I-N. That's Carl Levin, United States Senator. 202-224-6221. That's United States Senator Carl Levin, L-E-V-I-N, 202-224-6221. United States Senator Spencer Abraham, that's Spencer Abraham,
202-224-4822. That's 202-224-4822. Now, I would also urge you to call Michigan Representative David Galloway. David Galloway at 517-373-2616. That's 517-373-2616. Also, Michigan Representative Matt Dunaskis, D-U-N-A-S-K-I-S-S, Dunaskis, 517-373-2417. That's 517-373-2417. Now, when you get through calling all those representatives and senators, call the governor of the state of Michigan. His name is John Engler, E-N-G-L-E-R. The number is 517-373-3400. That's 517-373-3400. Now, when you get your copy of Veritas, look these people's names up and write them a letter and fax them. Do all of these things, ladies and gentlemen, and continue to do it until they agree to open an investigation and open up the records and have it examined by an independent investigative body. Don't stop. You must continue this until it's done. Remember, Scott's life is in danger. These people are crooks, and we've got to bring them to justice and clear the names of these good people who have been smeared. Now, for those of you who don't subscribe to Veritas, I suggest you send in $5 and get this copy, because you need that list whether you ever read another article in Veritas or not. Or subscribe. It's $50 for 24 issues. Make your check or money order out to Veritas and send it to P.O. Box 3390. That's P.O. Box 3390, St. John's, Arizona, 85936. Once more, Veritas, P.O. Box 3390, St. John's, Arizona, 85936, $50 for 24 issues. And for those of you who won't look these things up and who won't buy a single copy and who won't subscribe, you call Pete tomorrow and he will give you the names, the addresses, the phone numbers, and the faxes of all these people that you need to contact in order to take care of business. Now remember, folks, we'll either all hang together or we'll hang separately. Personally, I'd rather hang together. I don't know about the rest of you. Thank you, Karen.
Well, thank you, Bill. Both Scott and I are just eternally grateful to you.
You don't owe me anything, my dear. This is all a part of what's happening nationwide. And we've all got to chip in, we've got to draw the line, and we've got to stand with each other and fight these scum that are destroying this country. Good night, folks, and God bless you all.
I know a fella who lives down the block. His elevator don't go quite to the top. Works out at the mega mall where everybody shops. He's a rent-a-guard we all call Super Cop. Super Cop. He's got his eyes on you. Super Cop. You better watch out what you do. Super Cop. Don't you step out of line, cause he's here to take a bite out of shopping mall crime. Yeah, 10-4, got a little problem in the parking lot here. 10-4, roger now. No, I'll handle it. Look at that fella parking that handicap spot. He don't have a sticker on his car any place. Saw me coming, started running, so I shot him in the toe, I guess. Hey, you handicapped now, boy. You don't have to go. Hey,
you quit hopping around there for a minute, I'll give you a temporary stick. What's wrong with you?
Heel caps on his tennis shoes, one bullet in his thumb. He saunters down the sidewalk, makes sparks fly just for fun. All the little kids marvel and the teenagers run. Ain't gonna be no crime when the super cop is done. Super cop, yeah, he's always on guard.